You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Yes, hello, welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're going to look ahead to Tuesday's action on this edition. You'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 1:50pm with Darren Owen, Gary Capewell and John O'Connell in the studio. It's Thirsk and Force Lass in the afternoon, Nottingham and Chelmsford in the evening, so we're plenty to get stuck into throughout the day. My name is Mark Walton and I'm joined in the studio by top racecourse commentator Gareth Topham. How are you, Gareth?
Yeah, I'm good. First podcast for about a year, Mark, I think.
Yeah, where have you been?
It's been a while.
In that time, though, you've been away on weddings and honeymoons and holidays
many.
Commentating all over the country. Any big commentary gigs coming up?
I don't think so. Anywhere interesting? Chepstow later in the week. I don't go there often. That's my old home track. Quite looking forward to that. Nothing massive. Oh, Air Gold Cup Day.
William Hill Air Gold Cup Day,
of course. For the third year running as well, I'm becoming a bit of a regular for these big handicaps. So, that's the main one that I'm doing. And quite look forward to that because it's always absolutely solid.
I was going to say,
it's a pretty tricky day.
It must be one of the trickiest days you do, big field sprint handicaps.
I'm also doing the two-year-old trophy at Redcar, which is another tricky day.
Yeah.
So, I'm sort of the go-to man for the big cavalry charges, I think.
Which is, you're creating your own little niche there.
I like to think it's the company sort of, crediting me in their own way.
Yeah.
You can go, you're capable.
Oh, that's an impossible race. You go call that one. Yeah. How long does it take you to prepare for a day like that when you've got that many runners and go through all the colours and everything else?
Well, the Air Gold Cup day is not so bad. I usually end up doing the Silver Cup on that day because there'll be two of us working.
Yeah.
But generally with those big cup races, you know the horses, don't you? Because they've been, on the go all season and they're quite well known. The Redcar two-year-old races would be the harder one because you're actually working from a tougher position as well because we're not on the winning line at Redcar, whereas at Ayr we are. The Redcar race is definitely harder and I don't know many of the two-year-olds either, so that can be quite tough. But I'll just have a quick look the night before and then study them, get them all locked in on the way to post, the same as I do with every other race, because if your likes of Marwan Kukash has got a runner with Gabriel in the name or something along that line, you could confuse it with something else which is running later on in the day. So generally that's how I do it. I find that learning them on the way to post, and then they're fresh in the memory and forget them instantly afterwards. Move on.
Very good. Well, good luck with that coming up throughout the week and so on. We're going to start with the Monday Jury, really, on this edition of the podcast. We're going to spin through the questions there with Gareth, and then we're going to move on to the action coming up on Tuesday. So let's get stuck into it. The first question, Almanzor and Bramator, with they're both running tomorrow. Who's better equipped to go on and win the ARC? A couple of ARC trials over in France tomorrow, of course. On Tuesday, I should say, really.
I think the question sort of, it's almost asked a day early, really, isn't it? Because we're going to obviously find out how Almanzor is, who's now, of course, a four-year-old. Because, of course, he's not run since back last year when winning the Champion Stakes at Ascot. I mean, this horse was absolutely incredible, wasn't he, last year? I mean, that Irish Champion Stakes that he won. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a race that was as strong, really. Every runner in that race, I mean, the Derby winner was eighth, the Eclipse winner was ninth, the horse that had won at Royal Ascot in the Prince of Wales Stakes was fifth, Minding was third. I mean, it was just jam-packed with sheer quality, and he just blew them away. And then, of course, he went on to Ascot, and he beat Found once again. Found is one of the best race mares that we've had over the last few seasons. So it's just a question over his well-being. Where has he been? And I'm really looking forward to seeing him come back. And the other horse that we mentioned, Bramter, I mean, for the season, he's got some really, really solid form. He's been kept at home in France. He's been winning all the big races there, at Deauville, Chanty as well. He hasn't been winning them by all that far, but he does look an absolute class act. And, I think as far as well-being is concerned at the moment, Bramter looks to be the one. It's August now. Almanzor, he's got, two and a bit months to to get over whatever has been keeping him off. He'll probably go and run a really big race tomorrow, and hopefully he'll come back. You know, we want to see him back to the sort of form that he was in back last season. But I think to win an ARC, it's a pretty big ask as well.
After such an absence, yeah.
Yeah, so for me at the moment, Bramto looks the slightly more solid contender. But if Almanzor does bounce back to the sort of form which saw him beat all these, you know, red-hot, top-quality individuals back last season,
yeah.
You know, as in terms of an actual racehorse, in terms of quality, I think Almanzor just about pips him.
Be interesting to see how he gets on back on the race course on Tuesday. The market, by the way, for the Breeder Light of Triumph is headed by Enable at 2-1, 5-1 Almanzor, Bramto is 8-1, 10-1 for Winter, Highland Reel 12s, 14s, Saturno Diamond and Ulysses and 16-1 or bigger prices for the rest as it stands. Looking further ahead, who do you like the look of for the Judmont International?
Yeah, it's shaping up to be a good race. Shame really that Enable looks like she's going to be going elsewhere for this, but I don't think the race is going to be lacking too much, in fairness, because we've got the likes of Barney Roy, Churchill, Ulysses up at the head of the market, even Winters in there as well, whether she'll go for this. But Barney Roy, I mean, yeah, I think he is probably the rightful favourite because he keeps on running really, really solidly. That was a great run, wasn't it, in the Eclipse where he just got touched off by Ulysses. He showed a really good dogged attitude to fight back and go down narrowly. In that race, I think he's probably the rightful favourite. I'm not overly convinced with this Churchill at the moment. I know that they've generally been waiting for the ground with him. Got pulled out at Goodwood, didn't he, the other week?
And, yeah.
But ultimately, he does have that sort of below par Ascot run to overcome. And this looks like being, although we've got no Enable, a very, very hot renewal of the Judmont International. The yeah. Eclipse was billed as being one of the best middle distance races we've had for quite some time, and we've got the first and the second seemingly lining up here. And, you know, if you throw the likes of a former King George winner Highland Reel and possibly even Winter into the mix as well, it's going to be one hell of a race.
Yeah, it'd be great if they all turn up. I mean, like you say, the Eclipse form looks really strong. Throw in there a dual Guineas winner, one of the better older horses we've seen in recent times, and then possibly a real superstar filly as well. It could be superb if they all turn up for the Judmont International. Lady Aurelia, Batash, or something else in the Nunthorpe?
Yeah, I was impressed by Batash at Goodwood the other week, and we tend to find as well with the Nunthorpe, I mean, all it takes is a little bit of rain and the ground at York. It doesn't take too long to change. You see a lot of big races there run on, on ground with a bit of cut in it. I can see Lady Aurelia running really well, but she strikes me a little bit as the horse that Mecca's Angel used to mow down in the race, likely to go off pretty quickly. Mm. Will she fully see it out? I think the York straight course, it does take a little bit of getting for whatever reason.
Yeah, it does.
And Batash went through the line so strongly at Goodwood the other day, and I mean, he looks a horse well capable of living up to expectations. He's been racing in lesser company than Group 1, but he looks fully capable of holding his own in Group 1 company. And as I say, I was very, very impressed with him at Goodwood. He looks to be a real star in the making. So I'd probably just chance him over the shorter price filly.
Yeah. Looks a match between the two, really, doesn't it? Because the likes of Marsh are unprofitable. They've been running behind Lady Aurelia.
Yeah, they have.
Can't really see any reason why that would be turned around.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm a big Marsha fan. She's done me a few favours in the past. And she likes York as well.
Yeah.
You know, she's as tough as they come. But as you say, Mark, there's no real reason to suggest why she should be reversing places on the likes of Batash and Lady Aurelia from when they've met earlier on in the season.
Mm. Interesting how the market shaped up in the last few weeks as well. On the back of Batash's glorious Goodwood success, Lady Aurelia was odds on at that point, 4-5, now out to 6-4, with Batash shortening from 3-1 into 7-4, and very much the popular one in the market when I spoke to the traders earlier today. So the money coming for Batash, interesting to see if they end up flip-flopping in the market at any point in the build-up to the Nunthorpe. Next question, Enable versus Winter, 10 furlongs, good ground. Who do you see coming out on top?
Well, for me, it's Enable. I think they're two fantastic fillies. I mean, they're really the two stars of the season, aren't they, of the
yeah.
three-year-old brigade? Because the fillies at the moment, they're reigning supreme over the colts.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything male, really, which, you know, I mean, the Derby win has already been retired. There's nothing else, really, is there? I mean, you know, we've got a couple of good youngsters which are going to be going in the Judmont, but these two are really, you know, they really look to be something else, don't they? They keep on winning at the very highest level. But for me, Enable, I mean, what she did in the King George was absolutely breathtaking. She always looked in command in that race, and in doing so, she beat the boys. Winter still has to prove that, for me, she can go and do that at this sort of level. So, good ground, 10 furlongs, I think, Enable would come out on top. I mean, to Gruda, she was quite similar to Enable, wasn't she? She won everything, and
yeah.
and then she got to this part of the season, and then she suffered a defeat. So I'm sort of hoping, in a way, for the sake of the season, really, and its stars, that Enable doesn't get beaten, and it might be Winter the one who suffers if they do meet at some point. But it'll be a fantastic race.
It would, wouldn't it? It'd be something to really savour should they meet. Penultimate question: give us a horse to follow who has caught your eye this week.
A horse called Staxton. It won at Haydock last week, and I think it's got a couple of quite good entries coming up. It won, I'll tell you what it won. It won a novice stakes at Haydock Park. It was a Class 4 race, but I have not seen a juvenile stick his head out so much in a finish. He just showed such a good attitude. He really wanted it. He was strongly pressed all the way to the line. He kept on pulling out a little bit more. And Tim Easterby's horses at the moment, I mean, all season generally, they've been absolutely flying. So he's a horse with a big future for me. I think his attitude and his just general gameness is going to take him a long way in the game. He's got a couple of good entries as well. So Connections clearly thinking that, you know, he could be a bit of a star for them. He's entered up in the Gym Crack at York on the 26th of August. He's also entered up in the Group 2 Dubai Duty Free Mill Reef Stakes at Newbury on the 23rd of September. And for me, if he goes to either of them races, for me, he deserves his chance. He could go off at a pretty juicy price and run a big race because, as I say, his attitude counts for an awful lot.
Interesting. Staxton, then, the one for Gareth there. And final question of this week's Monday, Jory. Freddie Tylicky believes that racing should be finished by 8 p.m. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely right. Yes. Night meetings. Yeah. I can understand the idea of starting them, particularly in the peak of summer when we've got the daylight, starting them off at sort of 5:30, 6 o'clock, because it gives people a chance to finish work and it gives people a chance to go to the races. But ultimately, the people who are putting on the show for us, they are working out the following morning up at the crack of dawn. They're then going racing. They're riding in the afternoon. They're then travelling to another track, riding at night. It must be quite a demanding schedule for them. And I mean, as a commentator at this time of year, I mean, I don't go to as many meetings as the jockeys do.
No.
But I find a meeting that finishes at 9:10, particularly when it's somewhere like Hamilton, you know, you're not going to get home till gone midnight. And these jockeys are travelling further than I am.
Yeah.
So I think we can have the same amount of racing, if that needs to be the case. But yeah, it can definitely finish earlier. Because I think ultimately that the people who are putting themselves out and, you know, putting themselves out there just so that there is a product, they need to be the priority over the people who are actually going racing. If you're going racing as well, ultimately, you've probably had the date in your diary for quite some time. So whether you're at work or not, you know, if it's in the diary, you're probably going to take the day off in any case. So
yeah.
It'd be interesting, but I think we need to look after the people who are putting on the show for us, and that could be a way of doing it.
Yeah, just playing devil's advocate slightly.
Okay.
If you presume that people have got it in the diary weeks in advance, it takes away from the just on a whim, just, oh, I might go racing tonight. You know, that kind of...
Yes, it does.
That kind of angle, you're kind of restricting your audience slightly, aren't you?
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, yeah, it is interesting, and I mean, we'd probably get to see the crowd figures as well after a while, because there is a site that you can go on and check these out. I think time will tell how it would affect crowd, but ultimately, you know, the crowd are going to see the product, and it's these people, the jockeys, who are, you know, helping to provide it. And you know, it's not just the, you know, the jockeys either, you know, the stable lads and lasses, the people leading the horses around, the people who are just basically working in the industry. And I don't think an hour is going to make a massive difference, but it could to them.
Yeah.
You know, getting an extra hour's sleep. But because ultimately as well, if you're going racing, absolute, and some of these jockeys, I mean they're ultra fit, but at the same time they must be absolutely shattered at times.
Yeah, but yeah.
It might just reflect negatively on their overall performance. And you know, an extra hour in bed, an extra hour, you know, getting home a bit earlier, it's certainly no bad thing.
So that's the Monday jury then for another week. We're going to move on to Tuesday's racing now. We'll get Gareth's thoughts next.
William Hill Racing Radio. It's everything to give you the inside track.
Right then, on to Tuesday's action. Gareth has very kindly picked out four races for us. We'll spin through his thoughts in these. The first race that he picked out is the 3:30 at Thirsk. This is a Class 6 handicap. 6 furlongs is the trip. Division 1 of this particular handicap as well. We've got a field of 12 set to go to post here. And you've picked a bit of a wide open, tricky affair by the looks of things.
Yeah, but I see these horses quite a lot, so I feel like I might have a bit of an edge here. No, I think Perfect Words is going to be quite tough to beat. this horse won at Catterick back last week. It was pretty soft ground. I don't think it's going to be quite as testing out there on Tuesday. But she was well on top, or this horse was well on top in the closing stages. And Harrison Shaw has built up quite a nice relationship with this horse. Seems to get on with Perfect Words really, really well. I like Marjorie Fife as a trainer, up towards the top of the weights, but is just generally, I think, more solid than most of these. Has a likeable profile, and even though he's now at the age of 7, could just be going forward. And performances of late reflect that. So, yeah, Division 1 of a Class 6 handicap, wide open, but Perfect Words, I think, to run another solid race.
Perfect Words to defy the penalty, then. Who are you most worried about in there, just against your selection?
Again, the further you look on down the race card, there's not a great deal in it. Maybe Whiphound right down towards the bottom of the weights, though. I mean, he's a lowly rated horse, only rated 45. But Ruth Carr and James Sullivan, they're continuing in fine form at the moment. Otherwise, it's really boring, and you're looking up towards the top of the race card again, towards the likes of Ipu, who was a winner two outings ago. But I think the top of the race card might just dominate here in Perfect Words. He's number one. I think he'll take the beating. If something at bigger prices is going to come through, maybe Whiphound, as it is a handicap, he'll be getting plenty of weight from the selection.
Hmm. But Perfect Words, the selection for Gareth. Then we'll move on to the next race he's picked out, the 5:30 at Thirsk, which is a novice flat amateur riders handicap. A class 5 event over 7 furlongs. It's one of those kind of races where you're not only looking at the form of the horse, but what the amateur on board has done as well.
Yeah, and that's what I've done here. And Poppy Bridgewater takes the ride on Leze's Make On Madam, who has just been struggling to get her head in front so far this season, but she's a pretty tough mare at the grade as well. She tends to save her best for Beverly, which here at Thirsk would be perhaps a little bit concerning, although she has run well here at Thirsk in the past. She's been placed a couple of times, but as I say, she has tended to do the bulk of her racing on that stiffer right-handed track. But Poppy Bridgewater is one of the best riders in this race, and I just think basically Make On Madam's more likely to give a running than a few here. Prince of Time has got plenty of attractive form figures, but they've all come on the all weather, which seems to be his forte. And then you look further down, the likes of Tanawa, I mean, he does pop up every now and then, but it isn't often. I just think Make On Madam, she hasn't won for quite some time. She's now down to a mark of 70. I think she's got an excellent chance of finally bagging one this term.
Make On Madam, then, the pick for Gareth there in the 5:30 at Thirsk. We move on to Foss Last next. I don't know why I've done it in this order. I've obviously clearly got that wrong, but Foss Last 4:45 is where we'll go next. Class 4 handicap over 1.75 miles. Plenty of these arrive here in good form. Several of these arrive here in winning form, including the likes of Veiled Secret, who's got a penalty to defy. You've also got Catcher on the Go, who's only had the one start on the flat and one success. So quite an interesting race, this one.
Yeah, it is. And there's also Moabit, who was a winner at Salisbury on the flat at last time out. And this horse is quite useful over jumps as well. Paul Nichols trains, and his daughter Megan will be taking the ride. She claims £5 off the horse's back as well. He's still relatively unexposed on the flat. He's only had a few starts. He's won 3 of his last 4 outings on the level as well. So I think he ticks an awful lot of boxes. And Catcher on the Go, possibly his main danger. Again, he's coming up against some much more experienced handicappers and useful handicappers at that as well. But all he could do on his debut at this track the other day was win, and he did it in really good style and sprung a little bit of surprise that night as well. He's pitched immediately into handicapping level. Evan Williams knows the time of day, so I think he could go well at slightly bigger prices. But Moabit, quite a confident selection in that. It's a flat race dominated by horses which are not too bad over the jumps either.
Yeah. Moabit then, the pick for Paul Nichols and Megan Nichols in that 4:45 at Force Last. Then we finish off with a very valuable race at Chelmsford City. The 7:40 is the Essex Sprint Handicap, a Class 2 handicap over 5 furlongs, £32,000 to the winner, plenty of prize money on offer as well, and 12 set to go to post for this. We've got some pretty good sprinters lining up as well. The prize money has attracted a good field here.
Yeah, so it should. I mean, this will be one of the most valuable races of the entire week. Mm. And it's a really competitive little affair. I quite like the Quinn horse here, El Astronaut, who's already won at a couple of big festivals so far for the team this season. He won at the Guineas meeting, and he also won at Glorious Goodwood last time out, only by a short head, but it was a cracking performance. And with a handicap, you don't really want to see them winning by all that far. And this just might be a nice bit of placing by the Quinn team as well. So El Astronaut, who's won quite a few races already this season. That was his third win of the season at Goodwood. And if proving as effective on the all-weather, I think El Astronaut's got as good a chance as any in what is a very open race, but so it should be for the money.
Mm. We've got a little bit of a William Hill head-to-head going on there. We've got the Quins with El Astronaut and Tom Morley, who's been in doing racing radio for his own Encore d'Or. So,
oh, okay.
It's a William Hill fight in the 740 at Chelmsford City. Gustav, Gareth, as usual, just a little bit of a quick summary before you go. Just relay those selections for us then in a nice little package to finish.
Okay, Perfect Words in the 3:30 race at Thirsk, and then where are we going after that? 5:30 at Thirsk, or 4:45 at Fosslass if you want to go in time order. We'll go to Fosslass in time order. Might as well have them in order. Moabit in at that race. Back to Thirsk then for the amateur riders race. Make on Madam at 5:30. And to conclude in the Essex Sprint Handicap, the 50 grander, I'll take a chance with El Astronaut.
Thankfully, you got them in the correct order in the end there. Thank you very much, Gareth. Good to see you again. Good luck and enjoy it on Tuesday.
I'll see you next year.
Yes. A rare appearance from Gareth Topham then on the racing podcast. Good to have him back. You'll hear all of Tuesday's racing on Racing Radio from 1:50 p.m. Darren Owen, Gary Capewell and John O'Connell, the team in the studio. Do tune in for that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast and enjoy Tuesday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.